This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of the Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on Disney Plus from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show.
You're out!
There's confusion on the field. Sal Frelick took away a grand slam.
The Rich Eisen Show with guest host Tom Pelissero.
Earlier on the show,
three-time Super Bowl champion Mark Schlereth.
Coming up,
10-year NFL veteran defensive tackle Malik Jackson. Writer and director Ron Shelton. ESPN NFL analyst Chase Daniel. And now, sitting in for Rich, it's Tom Pelissero.
Welcome back to a Rich Eisenless edition of the Rich Eisen Show. Tom Pelissero in for Rich. Malik Jackson, I believe, waiting backstage right now. One of the better defensive linemen of his era. Played a long time in the league. Played in Denver with Peyton Manning. Played with the Eagles. What do you think is going on in Philly? We will get into all of that with him. Thank you to those of you who are watching us on Disney Plus and the ESPN app, listening on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. We've got a doubleheader from last night. We dove into the Falcons, the class of 2024 quarterbacks, how they're playing earlier on. There's also the Bills side of things that I think we need to unpack a little bit further. Big game for Bijan Robinson, by the way, last night for the Falcons.
No doubt.
Yep. The guy that we'd been waiting for. You remember back the first couple of years where there was just the constant weirdness of why is he not getting the football? Why is Tyler Allgeier getting the ball?
That's two words, Tom. Arthur Smith.
It's more complicated than that, though, right? If you're Arthur Smith, there's an element of who do you trust in certain situations? And was Bijan ready to take on the larger role? You watch him now. And Raheem Morris, every opportunity he gets, he said it again last night, best player in the NFL. Which is high praise, but you watch it with Bijan Robinson, which is, of course, complemented by the way that Michael Penix is playing, the way that Drake London is changing things from a physical perspective. Here's Bijan after the game talking about the way that things have kind of evolved early in his career here.
It's like a three-point shooter. You know, when I heard the analogy like with Steph Curry, like when he starts getting in the groove, you know, the basket looks this big to him and it seems like he can't miss. So with me, like with the O-line, you know, I feel like with them, they're all three-point shooters. Like they're all spot-up shooters and they're just creating space for me, for Ty, you know, to do what we do. So, you know, when those guys are on, when those guys are clicking, when those guys are, you know, knowing everything that they got and, you know, Coach Led always harps on, you know, just being, you know, great and straining with those guys and that's what they do, then with me, like, you know, I just use the God-given talent with the vision and stuff like that and, you know, it just opens up and when I find those creases, like, you know, you got to take advantage of it and, you know, you got to make those guys miss tackles and, you know, make them not want to be there anymore. So that's what we did tonight.
I appreciate the twist in that quote there. You thought he was talking about himself. No, he's talking about his offensive lineman, his Steph Curry. Those guys are in the groove. I've never seen an NBA Jam style call on a run play of the year. Heating up.
He's on fire.
Boy, what a block by Ryan Newseal.
Yeah, right, another pancake.
That. But Shea, he knows yes. Where the bread is buttered. Absolutely. As Marshawn Lynch once said, I'm taking my boys to Sizzler. Bijan's very, very happy. Played without Jake Matthews down the stretch last night, too. The durable left tackle wasn't even out there down the stretch. So they've done a fantastic job. Flip side of it. There was a lot of things going on for the Bills last night, particularly defensively in the first half. It was not good. It could have been even worse if Drake London doesn't end up out of bounds at the 1 yard line.
Oh, man.
Which probably swung how many thousands of fantasy games across the country, too.
He was already having a night, too.
Gets pulled back. Yeah. But Josh Allen, a little bit of the turnover bug popping up, a little bit of maybe trying to do too much. Here's Josh talking a little bit after that game.
We got to take advantage of our opportunities, the ones I alluded to earlier. Some things that absolutely completely went our way, and you know it sucks when you feel like two-thirds of your teams, the offense and the defense, are doing their job, and you're the team not to pull your weight. It sucks. So it's going to eat at me the next 2 weeks. So yeah, I mean, a lot of stuff to clean up. We'll, you know, put our focus to our next opponent and go from there.
That's about as frustrated as I think you see Josh Allen get right there. 4-2 entering the bye. They're not quite in Eagles territory, but you get some of the similar types of vibes here, which is like, we all think that they're going to be okay. They're going to figure it out. They were 4-0, and everyone was thinking, who exactly is going to beat the Bills? Not having Dalton Kincaid last night, I think, is a bigger factor. I know he threw a touchdown to Dawson Knox, but Dalton Kincaid, arguably been their best and most reliable target in the passing game. You take that guy out, the way that he can create mismatches as a detached receiver, that probably made an impact in the game. But 4-2 Bills, 1-5 Ravens, 4-2 Eagles. There's a lot going on, a lot to overreact to, I think, Brockman.
Oh, you know it, Tom. And it's Tuesday. It's Overreaction Monday on a Tuesday. Let's hit it.
That was terrible.
That was crap. That was garbage.
This place sucks.
Overreaction
Mondays.
Monday. On a Tuesday.
Hey, what's up, everybody? You guys good?
Yeah.
What's up? Mm-hmm. Did you guys battle the elements this morning? Or you guys didn't drive very far? It took me an hour and a half to get to work this morning. Oh. Here's the thing.
It took me 11 minutes.
If you can't drive in the rain, don't. Stay home. Call out sick from work that day. Stop clogging up the roadways by getting into needless accidents.
Absolutely not.
Nope.
So ridiculous. This is one of the spots in the country. Washington, D.C. is another notorious one. There are certain places where rain has even more of a bogged down effect than any place else. I can drive easier in Minneapolis in a blizzard than I can in Los Angeles in the rain.
If it makes you a little nervous or you're a little scared to go out there, just don't. Stay home.
If you don't know what you're doing, if you don't have
control,
let
the rest of us navigate the freeways.
There's a lot of ways to get around. There are professional drivers. You can get an app on your phone
and just call someone else to do it.
Order a ride from someone who literally has star professional driver by their name.
You think we need one more?
Yeah, exactly. Here's the deal. I watched in the game last night, obviously a huge Falcons win. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm thinking about the Bills and everyone just kind of penciled them into an AFC East championship. That would have been, what, 6 in a row or something like that this year. Going to the Super Bowl for the first time in a while. Yeah. The Bills are not going to be one of the top 3 seeds in the AFC this year.
Ooh. I don't know if we can get the standings up, but at this stage, they're still 4-2. The Colts are 5-1. Let's start.
But you know
there.
What? Who have either of those teams really beaten?
This is what I'm saying. The Colts are 5-1.
I mean, what are we doing? The Bills'
right now,
victories are against teams with one win, one win, one win, zero wins.
If I'm not mistaken, the Colts right now would be the number one seed.
They are, yeah. The Colts are number one. The Bills would be 5th.
So they have right now, all right, the top 5-1 Colts, followed by the 4-1 Steelers.
Also a fraud.
Then you have the Chargers, Patriots, Bills, Jaguars and Broncos all at 4-2.
Cool, there's only one good team on that list, TJ.
Chiefs would not be in the playoffs. Texans would not be in the playoffs. Bengals would not be in the playoffs. Ravens, obviously, would not be in the playoffs. We are 1/3 of the way through the schedule here. I would just say this. And listen, Shane Steichen, Lou Anarumo, Chris Ballard, they all deserve credit for what's happened so far in Indianapolis. Are they going to sustain over the course of the season? Are they going to be a 13 or 14 win type of team? We'll see. And we'll see how they approach the trade deadline here. Do they make an acquisition? Do they try to upgrade? I would just say this. The Bills are one game back of the number one seed right now. The idea that they're not going to be a top 3 seed, that they're not going to win their division. The Patriots just beat them. No question about it. They're a lot of fun to watch. That's going to be the biggest thing. Can the Patriots continue to sustain and take the Bills out of that spot? Because if you're a wild card, you're no higher than 5.
Right.
I still sitting here right now, those two teams are tied atop the AFCs. I would say it's an overreaction to say they're not going to be a top 3 seed.
Job. Way to play the game, Rhett, and make
I'm
a decision.
Trying.
Sometimes the person in that chair doesn't always make a decision.
It's normally me, but I'm trying to give you what you want right now.
Thank you. And here's the deal.
You
know who gave me what I wanted last night was Bijan Robinson. In our Chop League. TJ, glad to see you advance last night. Thanks to Zach Ertz. Sorry, Smitch is out. Bijan Robinson was an absolute beast. And I'm just going to say it. I know his coach has been saying it for a while. He's the best player in the NFL right now.
So your question is he the best player in the NFL? Not is he the MVP? Is he going to win it?
He's obviously not going to win MVP. Look, Saquon didn't get it. Neither did Christian McCaffrey. It's no longer a running back
award. It's MVQ, Tom.
Bijan Robinson is the best player in the NFL.
I mean, you have to have Saquon and McCaffrey in that category, too. McCaffrey has been putting up volume like he hasn't since his last really MVP caliber season, right?
He's been great.
The whole offense is going through him at a time that everyone else is hurt, including the quarterback. He's in that mix. I don't know that you have a wide receiver. Ja'Marr Chase would certainly be in there. For my money, Justin Jefferson is always in that conversation as well. Quarterback-wise, it's been a weird year.
Weird year.
I mean, right now, if we are, again, to twist this slightly, I'll answer your question momentarily here, but if we're talking
about
MVP candidates, are you taking a quarterback over Baker Mayfield at this point?
We've looked at the odds. Patrick Mahomes is actually now the betting favorite.
But that's based on where the money is going to go.
Sure.
Most people figure Patrick Mahomes is figuring it out. He gets Rashee Rice back this week.
I got it.
They're playing better. Mahomes is what Bill Belichick was to coaches for like 20 years, where every year you can give him coach of the year, but people don't vote for him.
Right.
Best player in the NFL always.
I think through 6 weeks right now, Baker Mayfield easily the MVP.
But I believe still Patrick Mahomes is the best player I've seen in my lifetime, including over your boy 12.
That's too bad.
That's how good Patrick Mahomes is. Bijan Robinson, though, I mean, if you're lining up top 10, I'd have him in my top 10.
Oh. Man, he was awesome last night. So overreaction for Bijan, yeah?
I would say overreaction. Okay. I thought that was clear by my answer.
I just wanted you to definitively say it.
Overreaction, player in the NFL. Thank top you. 10? I think he's in there right now.
We had a caller earlier. Trevon called in from Washington. Top 5 Caleb Williams victories. Really interesting list. Niche. Love it. But it was a big win last night. Put the Bears in the right direction. That's now 3 straight wins. I think the Bears are going to the playoffs.
They certainly are giving themselves the opportunity. That's going to be one of the most interesting teams over the next 3 weeks to see what they do at the trade deadline. Ryan Poles has been unafraid, for better or worse, to make big deals. He's traded for Montez Sweat at the deadline. He traded for Chase Claypool.
Yeah, right.
He's now out of the league.
He's a second round pick for
at the deadline. Chase Claypool? Second round pick for Claypool. Second round pick, I believe, for Montez Sweat. He's made, obviously, the trade with the Panthers for the number one pick, getting DJ Moore as part of that deal. They're always active. But are they in a position where they feel like they should be buyers? In other words, first year with Ben Johnson, are they a Super Bowl? Are they winning the Super Bowl in 2025?
The Bears?
Are they winning the Super Bowl? Because I would argue, if you're not winning the Super Bowl and you don't have an opportunity to fill something specific you don't think you get in next year's draft, you're at times overextending yourself just to say, hey, we got to get into the playoffs this year. There are times where you're better off amassing things for the future while building culturally from within. That's why I'm saying I think they're a fascinating type of a team at the deadline here. Are they a playoff team? I would say it's an overreaction to say right now they're a playoff team. Because even within their own division, you've got the Lions, who you still have to talk about as an NFC favorite, even after taking their second loss against the Chiefs. The Packers, I know that there's frustration. One of their wide receivers yesterday retweeting something about how they should replace Matt LaFleur as the play caller, which is a heck of a way to get yourself more opportunities on the team. It's also a ridiculous thing to say, and Matt LaFleur is one of the top play callers in the league. And a Vikings team that, listen, they were so beat up for the first 5 weeks. Almost the entire offensive line being out. No Aaron Jones. Jordan Addison getting suspended for a first quarter. Yeah. The quarterback goes down in week 2. Defensively, they've had all kinds of things. Harrison Smith hasn't even played a full game yet. Neither has Christian Darrisaw. But they're still a really good team and a really well-coached type of team. So the Bears right now, if you're stacking it on paper, I think objectively you'd still put the Bears 4 out of 4 in their own division. But at 3-2, do they have an opportunity to make this interesting? Absolutely. But no, overreaction to say they're a playoff team right now.
All right, 2 more, and we'll finish up. Malik Jackson's coming out. TJ, before the year, we did, how many teams do you think can win the Super Bowl? And Rich had, I think, almost half the league, 15. I think I had a dozen, and you had 7.
Yes.
Which was very admirable. I respected that. I was actually jealous that you did that instead of me.
Just keep it real, yo.
And so, but through 6 weeks, I think this is the most wide open we've seen the NFL in quite some time. In fact, 21 teams have at least 3 wins. Rich is going to do his power rankings tomorrow, and I bet that he has the Chiefs in the top 5, and they're not even in the playoffs if the playoffs started today.
Playoffs?
I think there is not a single elite team through 6 weeks in the NFL this year.
I don't think that's an overreaction. Schlereth said the same thing.
Yeah.
We had him on in the last hour here. Like, who is the the dominant team? Well, by virtue of the fact that we'd have to go back through and look at historically, but there's not a lot of years where you don't have a team that gets through the first one third of the season, six games undefeated. Everybody has stumbled at some point, including the mighty Colts, who if A.D. Mitchell doesn't decide to prematurely celebrate at the goal line or fumbles the ball, they might be 6-0.
Yeah.
They would be the last one. And while they've played, again, really well, and I give a ton of credit to everybody involved with that thing, are they a dominant team? Are you saying the Colts are the one team in the league we don't want to see right now? I don't think many people are looking at it like that.
No, they almost lost to Jake Brisket on Sunday.
Yeah, I don't think that it's an overreaction at all to say that there's not, I can't remember what your phrasing was, but a dominant team?
There isn't a single elite team through six weeks.
I would say not a single elite team based on the performance that we've seen so far. But if you ask me right now, who are the teams that you're going to be scared to see for the next two-thirds of the season? It is the Chiefs, who at 3-3 would miss the playoffs right now. But Rashee Rice coming back, a top 20 receiver,
yep.
That is a big deal for that team. The Ravens, I know this is going to sound like I'm out of my mind and don't know how to do math. They need to win 9 or 10 of their last 11 games just to get into the playoffs at this point. But that division, even with the Steelers at 4-1, is still wide open. They should have Lamar back. They should have Roquan Smith back. They're not a dominant team by any stretch, but they're not a 1-5 team. They're two Derrick Henry fumbles away, even setting aside everything else, from being 3-3, from beating the Bills in week one. So the fact that you have teams like that in the conversation, I think just goes to show there's not that single dominant team. There's not a, oh my gosh, there's no way, even if they get into the playoffs, they're not beating this team. If they make that type of run, if the Ravens get in the playoffs at 10-7 as a wild card, and pick your division, the AFC West champion goes to Baltimore for a wild card game, I'm still scared of the Ravens in that setting. Unless it's against the Chiefs, and then history would tell you it's probably Kansas City. You got one more?
Yeah, last one. Last year, guys, this dude told us to just Google him. And I was like, okay, so we Google him, never heard of him. He's a really good coach. And with Brian Callahan going down yesterday and James Franklin going down at Penn State, we are now in the, all right, hot seats. Coaches are going to start getting fired. And I think as we enter probably later this year and when the hiring cycle starts, it's going to be a hot name. Kurt Cignetti is going to be coaching in the NFL next year.
Google me.
That's a fascinating
Has Indiana third overall in the AP poll right now?
Well, I'd say this.
After winning at Oregon?
And I know Mel Kiper put out his first mock, or his big board, right?
The big
top,
board,
top
baby.
Top 25.
Mel's big board is out.
He had the Oregon quarterback at number one. He's got the Indiana quarterback who just beat Oregon.
Three.
At number three, Fernando Mendoza. It would not be the first time that we've seen a scenario where you have a match. It is extremely rare, obviously. Once upon a time, Cliff Kingsbury went into the NFL, had recruited Kyler Murray, had the perfect fit, and all of a sudden, Kyler Murray ends up in Arizona. This would be far more direct. Kirk Cignetti coming with Fernando Mendoza. With the way that things are going at Indiana, I mean, the best case scenario for Kirk Cignetti might be just getting a monster contract to just continue to be a Big Ten factor in Bloomington, Indiana. But I would say this, in a year where it's wide open in terms of who the coaching candidates are, it's a very short list in terms of the guys who are dialed up. And I talk with GMs, agents, other coaches about this all the time. There's not like a list of here's the 10 guys. These are all really strong candidates. It's not one of those years. I wouldn't be surprised at all if somebody is looking to the college ranks, whether that's for a Marcus Freeman, a Matt Campbell. I don't think it's completely outlandish to say Kirk Cignetti is a good enough football coach that's at least worth making a call and seeing. So I don't think he's going to be in the NFL, but if you're saying there's a chance, was that it? Or was he, what was the premise? Was it he will be in the NFL?
Will be coaching in the NFL next year.
Overreaction to will be coaching in the NFL. Not an overreaction to an NFL team might want to call him and say, would it be an overreaction to say you could be coaching in the NFL in 2026?
Jets go 0-17, have the number one pick. Obviously need a quarterback next year. There you go, Tom. There's your match.
Google me.
0-17 would be, that would be edgy in New York. 0-6? Not great. especially the way that 0-6 has happened. 0-17 comes around only once, twice a lifetime. I don't think they're that bad, but they're another team over these next 3 weeks, depending on how they decide to handle the trade deadline. Those losses might mount. Mount a little bit. All right, Malik Jackson's in the house. Longtime NFL defensive lineman. He's got a lot of opinions and also a great turtleneck. Look at him. He's with me next on the Rich Eisen Show.
The Rich Eisen Show podcast.
As many of you know, supporting pediatric cancer research is something I care deeply about. That's why I'm proud to share what Hyundai's doing through Hyundai Hope on Wheels. For over 27 years, with every Hyundai sold, they've helped fund pediatric cancer research. Alongside over 850 dealers, they've raised more than $277 million, helping over 25,000 kids and supporting more than 1,400 research grants at 175 institutions nationwide. This year alone, they've committed another $27 million in honor of the 27th anniversary of the program. And they're proud to have national youth ambassadors like Jackson Trin and Emmy Cole, who bring hope to kids across the country by sharing their stories. Because at Hyundai, hope is our greatest feature, and it comes standard. Visit HyundaiUSA.com and search Hyundai Hope on Wheels to learn more.
To the Rich Eisen Show, Tom Pelissero in for Rich on Disney Plus, the ESPN app and ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. We got a guest here who stands out for a couple of reasons. One, because it brings the grand total of Super Bowl rings in this room to one. Nice. And number two, because he's the rare guy who's been retired from the NFL for a few years and still fits, it appears, into the same clothes that he wore while he was in the NFL. Malik Jackson is with us, everybody.
Let's go. Right. I'll take that as a compliment. I appreciate that.
I'm telling you, there's a lot of guys, they walk in, they've lost 100 pounds or they have gained 100 pounds. Yeah. That's, I'm like, yeah, that could be the same Malik I used to see back in the locker room.
I got cheekbones now, and don't ask me to get back out there because I tried to do some running the other day and my calves are killing me. So,
yeah. Well, you're older now. We all age like that. Let me see that ring, by the way. Look at that.
Oh, yeah.
So right
Super Bowl 50. You know, it's a 10-year reunion of the Super Bowl 50 team. And yeah, we have a event this weekend going back to Denver. And also, it's pretty fitting that the Super Bowl's in San Fran. So it's kind of cool, just full circle.
What do you remember most from that season and that run and beating the Panthers?
Really just the a few things. The camaraderie, right? The way we were as a team, the way guys got together, ate together, the fights we had, but the brotherhood we had too to get over it. And really for me, it was really, that was my contract year, right? So I was really fighting to be one of the best and put myself in position, which is what I did. And so, yeah, it was just fun, man. You know, you walk around the house now or just take walks with my dogs and think about those days and giggle and truly appreciate them.
You talk about the fights you had. I was around that team some. You had some characters in that locker room. You had, obviously, Vaughn's on that team. Mm-hmm. Tlaib is on that team. Mm-hmm. Chris Harris, who's not quite as out of his mind, but also still a big presence in the room. Mm-hmm. What's one that stands out? What's one thing where you guys had to work through that season?
It's kind of what you spoke on, right? Just all those characters, all those identities, right? All those emotions going around. Because it's funny, when Keeb came in, you know, you see Chris Harris kind of get a little more boisterous right back there. You know, D. Stew's back there, T.J. Ward. So really, Roby. So really just saw those guys really get more boisterous. And I think that was it, right? Everybody had an opinion. Everybody was right. But then, you know, when Coach came in and Coach Wade came in and gave us the game plan, everybody was on the same page.
Well, one of my favorite stories from that Super Bowl, which, I mean, you guys dominated defensively. It was a terrific defensive performance. So that was also known for, after the game, Cam Newton walking off the podium in the middle of his media session. So the way that this was set up, and you might have been in that room as well, there was just a sheet. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a wall. So everybody, both teams are in one room, and there's just a sheet separating the podiums. So I'm on one side of the sheet talking to Chris Harris. Mm-hmm. Unbeknownst to me, Cam is sitting on the other side of the sheet. I asked Chris, like, it looked like you guys basically just were trying to take away the run. He's go, that's what we want to do, is make you throw the ball. Mm-hmm. Can you throw the ball?
Mm-hmm.
I then see the video of Cam walking off, and I hear myself ask the question and Chris's answer, and that's why he walks off the podium.
Oh. Hey.
Well, so remember that, but that was the plan in that game, was basically like, we are not going to let Cam Newton and that run game run on us. We're going to make you put it up in the air.
Yeah, because you know back then they were doing a lot of play action, right? Get him out the pocket, max protection. And so we took that as a challenge. We're going to keep in, what, 5 to 7 guys. We're going to add to it and let our DBs do their thing. So, you know, I think Cam had 3 hours to really show himself and get out there and prove us wrong. And luckily that day we had the best game plan and the best team.
Peyton Manning in 2013 threw 55 touchdown passes, was unbelievable. 2015, he was not the same guy. He missed time. He had the foot injury. Osweiler plays for a while. Peyton eventually comes back in. He couldn't throw the same way. Like, it was kind of like a t-shirt cannon where it's like it would pop and it would just kind of float to the receiver there. Yeah. What's your favorite Peyton Manning story from those years?
My favorite, it's funny, right? Because I was what you consider a brokey, right? So being able to look at Demaryius Thomas, Von Miller, D. Ware over there with Peyton having a good time, I'm just like, oh, that'd be a cool table to sit at. But you know, for me, I think just want to shine light on two guys that really meant a lot to me, which is Demaryius Thomas and Ronnie Hillman, right? Two guys that aren't here with us right now, but really put a lot towards the team, gave a lot of character, gave a lot of insight, man. And so really it's really just a laughs with everybody. You know, it's like you can't pick one moment, but it's really just having the laughs, having the teammate, and just understanding who everybody was, but also being able to learn. Because as you know, in the NFL, you know, guys have full-blown families, right? And so we actually get a chance to get together, eat, talk, learn, right? Everybody was cool with sharing. I remember Robert Ayers came into locker room. I mean, as a rookie, when you come in, you know, everybody's like, oh, this guy's going to take your spot, or you got to be careful, tell him the wrong play. But he just took me under his wing, which made me a lot more of a benevolent leader. So when I got older, I would just tell guys what the play was, help them out as much as I can, and, you know, push myself to say, well, they can't take my spot, right? And so it was just a great team.
You also played in Philly for the Eagles. There's still some guys there that you know.
Yep. Well,
from what you've seen, from what you know about the people involved, what's going on right now with the Eagles?
I just think it's just, it's any given Sunday, you know? It's been tough because they lost two tough games, right? One was a blocked field goal. The other was a drive at the end by the Broncos. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's just been two tough losses. But I think, you know, as a lot of people, like analysts and we know as players, but everybody else has to realize, you know, you truly win or lose a game by the mistakes. So if they can just cut down the mistakes, the little mistakes, they'll be fine.
Did you ever see Jalen Hurts come out of his shell when you were there?
Not really, man. You know, he was just a quiet young kid, rookie, when I came there, when he came in, just quiet, doing his thing, waiting for his turn. So he's very even keeled, very, you know, I wanted to rile him up, but he's just chilled, just as cool as the other side of the pillow.
What's it been like watching Carson Wentz through these past years? The first guy ever to start for, what, 5 different teams or 6, whatever the number is, in consecutive seasons?
Yeah. I mean, it's been an interesting year for me watching these quarterbacks get second chances, right? The Sam Darnolds of the world, the Mac Joneses of the world, right? These guys get drafted high, and then next thing you know, they're on the couch or preferably backing somebody up, right? And you know they want more. So to see Carson really get a second opportunity and actually take the bull by the horns and do good, man, it's cool to see, because I know he wants that.
How difficult is that? Obviously, you didn't play quarterback, but there's pressure on everybody coming into the league, right? And there's some guys who, especially if they're high draft picks, and then their first, whatever, game, season, couple of seasons, they're not making impact performances.
Yeah.
There's this constant deluge of social media reaction and fans and people sending them messages about you suck and you're a bust. I'm sure you weren't in that category, thankfully, but I'm sure you were around guys. How do you deal with that in the locker room?
I mean, it's tough, right? Because I'll tell you my personal story. So I came from Denver, went to Jacksonville. I was still the guy. You go to Philadelphia next, you become a guy. Why? They have Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham, right? They have their draft picks. So now you're seeing myself like, okay, this is interesting when you're a backup, right? Then you have Javon come in,
Hargrave
come in, right? And so now coach is like, hey, tell him he's starting. And I'm like, what the hell? So it's one of those things that, you know, it takes a lot out of you, but you just learn to be a team player. You know, you understand your role, you understand what you have to do, and you make the best out of your opportunities when you get out there. So, and then I go to Cleveland, and I'm still the guy, but the body was breaking down and the play wasn't where it's meant to be. So that's when I was like, you know what, I'm done.
You mentioned Jacksonville in there, and I was thinking about this morning, because you were there when there was chaos. So they believe it was in 2016, right? They fired Nathaniel Hackett as the offensive coordinator pretty early in the season. Gus Bradley gets fired late in the season. Yesterday we had the first head coach firing in the NFL this season, with the Titans firing Brian Callahan 6 games in. Does it make a difference in the locker room What is the just like the ripple effects? You hear that news, and is anything changeable once the train has left the station in the season?
Not really. That's why I don't understand like the whole midseason firings, right? They treat it like soccer, where you just get rid of these guys, bring a new manager in. But it really doesn't change anything in the locker room, because at the end of the day, we still have to do what we have to do, and the position coaches are the same. The scheme's going to stay the same. So you just got to go out there and really just try to play for the new coach, right? I mean, and do your job, because at the end of the day, was Titans. Did they win a game yet? They're 0-5 right
they're
now?
They're 1-5. They won the game where the Cardinals had a 21-3 lead, and then Amari DeMercado dropped the ball on the goal line and turned it into a Titans win. So, yes, they would be 0-6 if not for that.
But I think you have to understand, too, you got a rookie quarterback, right, who needs development. You know, we came from the days when an Aaron Rodgers was sitting behind a Brett Favre for a few years, right? And so gone are those days where quarterbacks sit to watch, sit, and understand what the speed of the game looks like and learn from somebody that's a Hall of Famer. So, you know, I think they should have gave Coach Callahan some more time, but it's the NFL, man, and some heads roll, you know. Oh, sorry, never mind.
We're on Disney Plus. It's okay. We'll scrub that in the post-production. When you look at the current state of line play in the NFL, like, are there defensive linemen who every time you see a highlight, you're like, that's it. Like, that's the dude.
Man, it's funny enough. Calais Campbell, right? Great friend, ex-teammate. I'm just still amazed by how he's out there walking the way he walks, how big. It looks like every step he takes hurts. But to see him, I watched the game, got a sack, arm over. I was like, man, this guy's still exactly who he is, right? So for me, I tell him, like, hey, man, retirement's fun. You know, come hang out, you know. But he's still playing at a high level. So I don't know if he's going to try to get another 3 years in. We'll see.
Hey, he's unbelievable, because he's the biggest human you're ever going to meet. Just he's so tall. I mean, I think he's listed at 6'7" or something. He seems taller than that.
Yeah.
But just like this naturally massive dude with a really deep voice. Yeah. Like, he's one of those guys that you feel like if he wants to play till 45, he might be able to do it. But it's a very rare thing. You get to Cleveland, you know your body's breaking down. Like, there's not many guys, if it's genetic or whatever it is, who can go that long.
Nah, it's funny enough. When he first got there, we got together in Jacksonville, and I'm watching do his stuff, and I tried to do an arm over like he does and got punched in the chest. I was like, whew, I can't do that. You know what I mean? So it's just funny to watch guys and see what they do and try to make it your own, right? But, I mean, I love Calais, man. I'm hoping the best for him, you know. Hope he stays healthy and can keep going as long as he wants to. You know, now, granted, this is an Elysium where you can lay on a table and everything's fixed. You know what I mean? I'm sure he's going to be dealing with some stuff. But, man, he knows how to handle himself, take care of his body, and perform at a high level.
Malik Jackson is with us in studio here. There was an incident at the end of the Sunday night game with the Chiefs and the Lions, if you saw it. Brian Branch. Well, wasn't thrilled with being pushed in the back earlier in the game by Juju Smith-Schuster and decided to blow off the quarterback, go and punch Juju in the head. Were you ever inclined, or did you ever have to, let's say, finish the job post-game?
There were a few times. I know two times where one was like Taylor Lewan right there when Jacksonville were playing them on a Thursday night. He's just chirping. You know, they're running zone schemes and everything. We just got beat fairly well. And, you know, at the end of the game, I told him, meet me on the 50. And, you know, we got there, but he was a lot nicer then. So I couldn't just attack him, right? And then there was, the tight end for the Arizona Cardinals, Grisham, back in the day. We were getting after it. And luckily back then, cameras weren't everywhere, especially after the game, everything cut, right? And so you kind of, you know, have a little few words and then get out of there. So, you know, I think what Branch did was he stood on business. And it's one of those things, you know, everybody can understand. Not everybody's, push aroundable. So let's keep it within the lines. Let's play the game. But, you know, you saw the bloody nose he had, so.
So you say somebody was nicer to you once you met at the 50.
Yeah.
Is it full apology mode? What did you hear
that
made you
smiles.
Not have to?
He was all smiles, like, hey, da, da, and I was like, nah, I'm not with that. Let's go. And he was like, you know, they won. He's like, nothing to fight about, right? It was just his character and how he gets in the game and moves, you know, from his Michigan days or whatever. So there was no apologies. He was just like, oh, what's up, man? All smiles. And so I had to kind of calm it down a little bit. So, yeah.
There's some guys who probably are a lot better turning that off instantly than other guys.
Yeah, you know, but me, I was just so turned up. I was like, nah, I'm not hearing that. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
So right now, we brought this up earlier in the show. If you go back and you look at the betting favorites going into the 2025 NFL season, end of August, who are the people that people are putting money on? It was the Ravens. It was the Eagles. It was the Bills.
Yeah.
Who all have some level of issues right now? The Ravens are 1-5. Obviously, the Bills and Eagles both 4-2, but not perfect teams right now. Is there a favorite in your mind? You're picking one team you wouldn't want to be seeing in January and February?
might be a wild card, but I'm really hoping the Jaguars can get it going. I think the Shaikh Khan and the family, I want to see them get a ring, right? We got close, but NFL's rigged. Sorry, I don't know who said that. But, you know, I just think that...
You know, Brogman's a Patriots fan. He might have a few things to say about that AFC Championship game, which you guys were leading in the third quarter.
We had it, and then we had some... Miles Jack was down. Miles Jack wasn't down. You know what I mean? But, you know, when you're making rules for guys in the middle of a game, what, you know. Anyway, I'm hoping the Jaguars can get it done.
Brockman, your response to that? I'm sure you remember that game. You were throwing things at the TV and probably until that play.
Yeah, hold on. Let me take the rings out of my ears. Hold on a second.
Oh, I didn't know he was on a team.
Nope. He's on team buffet during the game. That's where Brockman is.
They hate us because they ain't us. I mean, what do you want me to say to that? He's way bigger than me. I'm not going to talk any smack.
The week before that, though, it is still the wildest NFL game I've ever covered in Pittsburgh against the Steelers. And this was Blake Bortles as the quarterback. You guys had a talented team. Yep. Fournette was on that team. Jalen Ramsey was on that team. Obviously, you know, you guys up front were really good defensively. But, like, everyone forgets that game, in part because immediately after it, the Minneapolis Miracle game was on, which now is still played everywhere, and Stephon Diggs making the play. I was, even though I live in Minneapolis, I was in Pittsburgh going, this is the wild. It was 45-42. A score that Calais, when I had interviewed him a few days before, just threw out there. Was like, hey, I don't care if we win 60-0 or 45-42. A score that had never happened, and then they won 45-42. Calais sees me in the locker room after. He's like, hey, you go find that tape. I said 45-42. And I had our people go and find the tape. He called the score. But there was no reason to think this Jaguars team was going to go into Pittsburgh and win. But there was something about that group, especially the way that you guys were on defense. Yeah. Like, you made it hard on everybody, every single week.
Yeah, we were just a rough ragtag group. You know, you thought Denver had a, loud, boisterous, you know, imagine a bunch of Aqib Talibs out there right in the back end. And then guys with, something to prove on their shoulders in the front end and the D-line, the linebackers, right? Telvin Smith, Calais, Avery Jones. So, Dante Fowler,
who's still there, right? I mean, there was a lot of dudes.
It was a lot of good dudes there. So, we were just, the ski mask versions. We were out there, didn't care. We're out here pushing people around and, saying and doing things you can't say on Disney Plus. But, it was
I already broke the code. I say just go for it now.
Let's
not. tell me real quick before I let you go. What else are you up to now?
So for me, once I retired, I just realized that everybody gives their all to their business, their family, their mission, right? But there's no care given back to them in the same level. And so what I did was went out there and created the Care League. We're a concierge lifestyle and wellness company, really looking to give access connections back to whether you are an athlete in retirement, executive running a company, or a parent just trying to figure it out. Just let you guys know that we have your back and everything, whether it be health and wellness connections or lifestyle needs. So that's what I'm working on now. Just I understand truly the access and the support that we get from an NFL. When you're in an NFL and when that's taken away, you're lost, right? You're a novice. So I realize that I can give this type of service to everybody and keep athletes thriving in retirement.
Great seeing you again, man. Yeah, thanks for being here.
Likewise, I appreciate you guys.
Give me the flash that ring one more time at Brockman on your way out. Believe me, everybody, Super Bowl champ with us in studio right now. Ton more to come here on this edition of the Rich Eisenless Show. Tom Pelissero in for Rich.
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show on Disney Plus, the ESPN app and ESPN Radio presented by Progressive. Let me talk to you now about Sonos, the speakers that bring every game to life at my own house. With studio quality sound, Sonos makes you feel like you're right there in the stadium. Whether you're cheering on your team, binging your favorite show, or listening to the hottest songs, Sonos fills every room with incredible sound. Setup is easy. Just plug in, open the Sonos app, and you're ready to go. Want stadium quality sound at home like me? Explore soundbars, speakers, and more at Sonos.com. Sonos, they look as good as they sound.
We're talking about that 2017, January of 2018, AFC divisional game. Jacksonville and Pittsburgh, okay? 87 points in this game. 38 in the fourth quarter.
You have no recollection of this, right?
I
this game has been wiped.
I had forgotten
from
it.
From the collective unconscious.
This game is insane.
Yeah.
Ben Roethlisberger threw it 58 times, 469 yards. Nice. 5 touchdowns. Okay. Antonio Brown. We've all forgotten how amazing Antonio Brown was. 7 catches for 132 yards. Okay. Vance McDonald had 10 catches for 112 yards. Leonard Fournette had 3 touchdowns. Some of the names of the guys that scored in this game: T.J. Yeldon, Martavis Bryant, Tommy Bohannon, Le'Veon Bell, Juju Smith-Schuster caught a touchdown from Ben Roethlisberger.
And nobody remembers that game because the moment it ended was the Minneapolis Miracle beginning. So I live in Minneapolis. All right, not a Vikings fan. Everyone I know is a Vikings fan. But so I'm in the locker room talking to Calais Campbell, who had somehow predicted the exact score of that Jaguars victory, doing my, you know, on the field stuff, get to the airport. I'm on the plane watching the Minneapolis Miracle on the plane. So, you know, at some point the TV cuts off. Now that doesn't happen as often. I think they've got like a better system for it. But at some point, like you're getting below a certain, you know, the flight deck.
Right.
Whatever the top gun line is.
Hard deck.
Hard deck.
Hard deck.
See, I love that movie. Watched it on a plane. And so like my internet cuts out with like 30 seconds to go. We get down onto the ground. I turn, my phone pops back on, and it's just
a bajillion messages.
Every tweet, every text. I'm like, what happened? The game was over. And then you see the play. I almost forgot about the Steelers-Jaguars game. And the main reason I remember was Calais Campbell, a scoregami prediction, never in NFL history. And days before it said, don't care if we win 45-42, the exact score of the game.
I mean, Minneapolis Miracle, also insane. 17-7 going into the fourth quarter, 29 fourth quarter points. Obviously, the Stephon Diggs walk-off. Joe Buck's epic call.
And Marcus Williams, who missed the tackle on that play. He had a great rookie season, I believe it was, for the Saints. And I remember talking with him the following year, just being down in New Orleans. Like he was so mature about the whole thing. And there's a lot of people who would be like, bleep you, I don't want to talk about that ever again.
Right.
There'd be other people who just like crushes their soul. Marcus Williams developed into a really good player and then went to the Ravens and got a big free agent contract too. But you think back at who else is involved in that play. I mean, it's Case Keenum throwing it to Stephon Diggs. Why Case Keenum? Because Sam Bradford had hurt his knee early in the season. Why Sam Bradford? Because Teddy Bridgewater's knee had exploded the year before on the last day of training camp. There is so much weirdness.
Sam Bradford was on the Eagles to start that year.
He was on the Eagles throughout training camp. Bridgewater gets injured, I want to say, on like August 30th. And then on cutdown day, the Vikings trade a first-round pick and more to get Sam Bradford, who played pretty good his first year. And then the second year, that's when knee gets hurt in week one, can't go week two. Keenum takes over. He's hot. Bradford goes out and tries to play at one point. Can't move anymore. Keenum comes back in, and they go on one of the great runs of all time. Every great Viking season is somehow marked by something bizarre happening at a quarterback. 1998, it's Brad Johnson gets hurt right out of the gate, and Randall Cunningham leads the run.
And is unbelievable that
2009
year
is the acquisition of Brett Favre, who is not even there until the end of August. 2017 was the run with Case Keenum. And now, who knows, the Vikings make a run this year. It will be the story of Carson Wentz, J.J. McCarthy, God knows what else. You'd hope just those two. The next man up is Max Brosmer. That's the... That would be the next guy, the undrafted rookie out of Minnesota. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance, supporting you every step of the way, progressive.com. We still got a lot more to come on this episode of the Rich Eisen Show. We are going to have Chase Daniel on in the last hour, one of the best guys that you're going to find anywhere breaking down quarterback play within the NFL. I'm curious to ask Chase what impact, if any, the firing of Brian Callahan could make on Cam Ward as that thing moves forward with a highly drafted player in Tennessee.
The Rich Eisen Show Podcast.